Well, this is a good day to be able to have Political Rewind on the air because we have a big, big week coming up in politics. On the national scene, of course, fired FBI Director James Comey goes up to the Hill on Thursday, testifies in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. No one knows what he's going to say, but there is some speculation that he might reveal to some extent what he had to say in his private meetings, what President Trump may have said to him in at least one private meeting. And then, of course, this week here in Georgia, we have not one, but two sixth district congressional debates, one tomorrow night that Channel 2 will be running live, I think, Jim Galloway.
8 o'clock. 8 to 9.
Then Thursday, WABE-WPBA has a second debate.
Right. And I think Dennis O'Hare is the sole moderator.
Yeah, that's what you told me. All right, so Jim Galloway, you've already heard him. You know who he is. He's the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read his column on Thursdays and Sundays in the paper. And, of course, he oversees the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. And I'm very happy he's here with me on almost every Monday and Friday, unless he's off to Scotland for a couple of weeks, which he just was.
Well, that's the last time for a while.
Okay. Brian Robinson, a Republican strategist who worked, of course, in Nathan Deal's administration when he was the communications director for Governor Deal, as well as his deputy chief of staff. And Brian, we never talk about the fact that you had a pretty good amount of experience up on the Hill before you came home to do stuff in Georgia, yeah?
That's right, yeah. Two now retired congressmen, Phil Gingrey and Lynn Westmoreland.
You put them out of business, huh?
Yeah. It's going to happen to Nathan Deal soon, too.
And back with us, he hasn't been here in a while, is the principal. What's the word? Sole proprietor of the Paramount Consulting Group. Theron Johnson just opened his own consulting business. So you're going to be too busy to come in here very often.
No, I just don't have a boss to work for now. I'm the boss. And I hope my good friend Brian will let me, you know, maybe go on some pitch meetings with him now and get all that money he's been making for the last few months now. Right.
Well, you'll need to read my book.
So you've hung a shingle and are going to be doing government affairs, some campaign consulting work, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. You know, Bill, this is something that I've been wanting to do for a while. I mean, I've talked to Jim and Brian about this as well. I just think that as the state is changing, I'll be able to bring a unique skill set.
Bipartisan, right?
Bipartisan, yeah. I'm not going to be pigeonholed to just doing Democratic stuff in the state of Georgia. Believe it or not, there are some white Republicans out there who actually like return my phone call.
Yeah, I don't know. In this state, if you really want to make a living, you better be willing to work with the Republicans the way things have gone over the last 10 years. Well, congratulations
thank you so much,
Theron Johnson. All right, a lot to get to. Let's start with what I think is really interesting news, Jim Galloway. You know, the question about how many debates Handel and Ossoff were going to be willing to meet in has changed over the last week or so. People who are frequent listeners to the show know that last Wednesday, your colleague Greg Bluestein, when we went on the air, said, oh, news has just broken. Karen Handel's accepted 4 debates. A little bit later, he said, well, yeah, but Ossoff hasn't accepted all 4 of them. And this weekend, Ossoff turned down what promised to be a pretty big debate.
Right. Now, but let's just back up a little bit. Right after the April 18th first round of voting, Ossoff proposed 6 debates. But Handel couldn't. It's all a matter of whose dates do you accept?
Yeah.
You know, so Ossoff proposes 6. Handel proposes 4. Right now, they've agreed. The two similar dates are out there. One is Tuesday. One is Thursday.
Yeah.
And of course, the big news yesterday was that Ossoff had declined the Atlanta Press Club invitation to appear at their debate, which would have been aired on CNN.
Yeah, CNN really wanted to get involved in this contest. And Ossoff said no. Brian, it doesn't seem surprising. It doesn't seem surprising Ossoff would say no to that debate, does it?
Why? Why? Why does that seem surprising? Because, here's what it's about. One that's going to have national audience is going to be about Trump. The whole debate is going to be about Trump. So what does that tell us about his polling? What does that tell us about his strategy? If you would think, you know, the Democrats who are funding his campaign from New York and California, they want to see him go on CNN and bash Trump and talk about how crazy he is and how we're embarrassing ourselves from the Paris Accord and across the board, whatever it is. That's what they want to hear. And
but that's not what John Ossoff really wants to do in closing this race, does he, Theron?
But that's the question, though. It shows that Trump is stronger in this district than Democrats want to let on, and it shows you that's why Karen Handel is, you know, being seen with him, having Pence come in and talking about supporting the president's agenda.
You know, Brian last week was basically criticizing John Ossoff because he actually thought that John Ossoff was actually calling for too many debates. He was complimenting Karen Handel for only wanting to do two.
So four, but
it was the two mains that we're talking about. Here's what I think is going on, Bill, and I'm going to be bold today. I think that John Ossoff actually is looking at internal polling numbers. And he sees what Brian knows, and that is that he's winning this race. Now, this whole notion that he does not want to go on a national outlet like CNN and debate this woman, who all we know about her is that she is a Republican, it's just ludicrous. I do think, however, John Ossoff should have probably said yes to the debate, because I think that the image that people will see is that you'll have on one side a very career politician and Karen Handel, and then you have another person who, in John Ossoff, who represents the future, not only the Democratic Party, but the future of this country and where we're going. I think that the key for John Ossoff is going to be on tomorrow. If you decline a debate, you better come with it in this one debate, because you're only going to have one shot after that.
Yeah, I don't get why he's letting the storyline be that I'm too afraid to debate. Even though he's not too afraid. He's obviously going to do a number of these with her. But the thing is, the storyline now is he's turned down what would be the most high profile debate that there is.
And it would have been staffed by national correspondents, and they would have tackled the national agenda, and that goes to the heart of his campaign, which has been to talk local, to talk economic development, to talk fiscal responsibility. Brian, I know you're rolling your eyes right there, but to keep on that message, and to deprive Karen Handel of, I don't know if y'all saw it, but last week there was an interesting clip that the Handel campaign really jumped on. The NRCC jumped on that in which Chris Cuomo on CNN really kind of started hammering Ossoff on the money that he was accepting from out of state, on the fact that he didn't live in the district. And I really think that might have influenced his decision.
All right, let me offer an alternate scenario. Ossoff, it's interesting, Brian, because, and I want you to please help me understand this. I mean, Ossoff, we know that he ran up till April 18th on the, you know, make Trump angry, whatever the actual line was.
Accountable.
No, outraged.
Furious.
Make Trump furious. All right, then he dropped it.
Yeah.
We haven't heard that at all. He has not run an anti-Trump campaign leading up to the June 20th race. He's barely talking about Donald Trump. Why does a Democrat who needs to win more moderate voters in a district that's, you know, really up in the air, want to go on CNN, which we know Republicans are convinced is, you know, Nancy Pelosi Central?
Yeah, but listen, John Ossoff has not. He doesn't need to talk about Donald Trump, because since April 18th, Donald Trump has given us at least three, you know, reasons for he doesn't even have to talk about it. I mean, you look at what happened with Comey, firing Comey. You look at what happened with General Flynn's investigation, and now with the Paris climate deal. And it was something else before that. I think John Ossoff's campaign made a fundamental decision, Bill, that they actually knew you cannot win this race by just being anti-Trump. Since April 18th, unlike Karen Handel, say what you want to say about the guy, he has at least spent millions and millions of dollars telling us what he's for. Well, and I think ultimately that's going
to
be.
And let me also say one thing to add to your thought, Theron. John Ossoff is after moderate Republicans.
Yeah.
He's after every moderate Republican vote that he can get. He's not going to get those votes by making moderate Republicans feel guilty for supporting Donald Trump last November.
And look, here's what we as Republicans have to do. This is what the Karen Handel campaign must accomplish over these last 16 days. Is that what it is?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. I'm not really good at math. That's why I do this for a living. The
poor children at UGA.
What we have to do is make voters know that this is not a choice between a Republican and somebody who is whatever you want him to be. we need to make Ossoff choose between those independents and moderate Republicans that he is targeting and his Democrat base. We need to let one of those groups know he ain't with you because he can't be with both. He is not going to vote for the tax cut this year. He's going to be against the defense increases. He's going to be against our efforts to strongly vet who comes into this country so we don't have what happened in London over the weekend. He's going to be against those things. We're for him.
All right. Meanwhile, the state Republicans, so there's no CNN debate. And there was a fourth debate offered, WSB Radio.
It's still up in the air.
It's kind of up in the air.
The North Fulton Chamber is a sponsor of that, I believe. And the key there is Karen Hendel used to be the executive director there.
Yeah, that seems like walking into the lion's den if you're Ossoff. All right, so let's move on. Brian and Jim, you spent a good part of the weekend out in Augusta. The state Republican Party had its annual convention. And one of the featured speakers, of course, was Karen Hendel. Let's listen to just a little of what she told delegates.
As a nearly 25-year resident of the 6th District, we are not going to turn over a seat with the legacy of Tom Price, Johnny Isaacson, and Newt Gingrich to Pelosi's puppet.
All right, so Jim and Brian, let me start with you, Jim. We have talked on this show before, and we know that Karen Hendel has never been a real darling of Georgia Republican Party, and to some extent, that's been her own choosing. She's a fighter, and she has taken on people in the party over a period of years, won quite often. How was she received in Augusta? Was it a good weekend for her out there?
It was. Now, Brian, I don't know if you were at the Friday evening event. I saw her on Saturday morning. She gave a good speech. I'm not going to say that she raised the rafters. She got, you know, maybe a standing O from, you know, maybe a half of the 1,500 delegates there. They had other things on their minds, but I would, you know, the one thing I would say is she spent 12 hours in Augusta, by my count, by going to the evening event and the morning event.
With less than a month to go before the election.
That is a crucial decision, logistical decision right there, that she decided that energizing those people who may be working phone banks, a few of them might actually be voting. That was important to
but
her.
She did have a big phone banking operation out there, right, Brian? I mean,
oh, yeah.
They made they claim to have made 100,000 calls, is what I heard.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of calls.
I'm telling you, that's...
Man, I don't know. I take them at their word. But
too many?
Well, I mean...
Maybe I got that wrong, but that's what I was told.
I will be super impressed if that's true. What I do know is that I was a delegate, so I was on the email list for this, and they were pushing that phone banking hard. And to Jim's point that she didn't raise the roof or get a huge response, no one on Saturday got a huge response. The closest that anyone came was Senator Perdue, who gave a real stemminder of a speech.
That's true.
I mean, nobody who was running for an office got treated like a returning hero. It just wasn't that atmosphere. But I will say that everywhere I went that weekend, everybody was wearing Karen Hendel stickers. Now, most of those people, as I said, like 1/14 of the people there live in the 6th District, and everyone there is going to support her. But she was a universal presence on people's shirts because people are taking it very seriously. They're dialed in 100,000 times, apparently. And I made a strategic scheduling decision, too. I missed that Friday night event because I'm from Augusta, and I had to go get some hometown barbecue.
He went to Scaniers.
I went to Scaniers.
Of course you did.
Yes.
All right. Meanwhile, the strangest speech of the weekend may have been the newly announced Republican candidate for governor, Michael Williams.
Yeah.
Mike Williams got up in front of the delegates and, among other things, said that there are people trying to buy him out of the race by offering him a plum chairmanship, right?
Yeah. This is the co-chairman of the Trump campaign in Georgia. He's a two-term senator out of Forsyth County, a businessman, And he went at the Republican crowd, trying to persuade them that pretty much every politician that was walking around on the floor there had something to hide and something to be ashamed of.
Saren, isn't that the Trump model? You go in there as an outsider, and you don't mind taking it right to the people in the party that you're trying to win the nomination of.
Yeah, let's also talk about exactly what the senator said. I mean, he actually referred to them as the quote-unquote establishment. I mean, he said that we are amongst the establishment Republicans. And so I think what you're going to see from his campaign, he's got this guy, Seth Weathers, who's Brian's best friend, who's running his campaign. Bright hair looks good, but Seth's hair really looks good. I mean, this guy's been known to be a bomb thrower. So I think this is definitely going to cause some
dissent. And we should be specific. I mean, the offer that he said that he was offered the chairmanship of the Senate Appropriations Committee,
right,
which is a very powerful position in the Capitol. And it's also currently occupied by Jack Hill of Reidsville,
who was in the audience. And let me say this. There's only three people who could come close to offering that to Senator Williams. And none of those three people talked to him before that speech. And in the speech, he very specifically said, 20 minutes ago, I was offered the Appropriations Committee chairman if I get out of this race. It's fabricated. It's completely untrue.
So from my point of view, in terms of our listening audience, what's fascinating about that, aside from the machinations, the internal politics of that is, this, it seems to me, is a continuation of what Donald Trump started when he was a candidate for the Republican nomination. Theron, you're nodding.
I think when Brian got on the road to come back up 20 West on Sunday morning, I hope he went to church with his family, is that I think that he realizes what I realize, and that is that they're leaving in a convention where they just really elected a guy who really is no different than what they had. The party is basically broke, and now you have a guy like Senator Williams who is going to be a disruptor to the core of the Republican Party. Right,
Theron Jim, of course, is talking about the chairman's election, which occupied a good part of the weekend, and they did
It's John Watson. Yeah. John Watson. And let me disagree with you.
Okay.
I think that was probably the best choice open up to Republicans on that they might have made, for the very reason you just cited, because the party was broke, mm-hmm. because it had lost all credit, not all, but a lot of credibility with the elected officials who also represent Republican voters. And Watson is a guy who has the trust of both Sonny Perdue, David Perdue, and pretty much Nathan Deal. Who I don't think he made a formal endorsement, but I'm pretty sure that there was some quiet support
all right,
there.
Before we take a break, and we have to in just a minute, Brian, for listeners who are not part of the process, who aren't working within the Republican Party, what is the impact of John Watson? How are we all out there in the world at large going to see an impact from John Watson, a real party regular, on the state Republican Party? Is there going to be any impact that we'll feel at all?
You want if John does his job right, and he will, because he is by far the best candidate. He's who I voted for on all three ballots on Saturday. Is you won't see him at all. The best chairman is somebody you're not going to see very much at all, because the news that we've heard out of the state party for the past 2 years has been bad news. It's about how far into debt we are. It's about lawsuits being filed against the party because of inappropriate comments made in the workplace, etc. It has just been dismal. And John's got a big job on his hands. I mean, it is going to be tough to dig out of the hole that we're in. He's the one person who can do it.
Okay, we got to get a break in. Meanwhile, while the Republicans were up there in Augusta, Stacey Abrams was down in Albany announcing formally that she is running for the Democratic nomination for governor. That is a potentially very important story, and we're going to talk about that on the other side of a break. This is Political Rewind.
It's time for spring cleaning. Donate your used car to GPB. Just call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate online at gpb.org/cars. That's 877-GPB-1-CAR or gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, Jim Galloway in the studio today with me. Theron, Stacey Abrams, officially the House Minority Leader for quite a while now. a woman who over the years has known how to reach across the aisle, make compromises. Some say that's a positive, others say that's a negative, but she has shown her ability to be a little bit less than always partisan. She announced in Albany, and of course, the headline around this is that this is, if she were to win this race, she becomes the first African-American female governor in the country, right?
Correct. You know, listen, I mean, I think that her rollout was really good. I mean, going outside of Metro Atlanta, I think was a fundamental decision that the campaign made. She understands that not only in the primary, but if she's got a chance of winning in a general election, that Southwest portion of Georgia is going to be very important also in Southeast. And listen, she got a tremendous amount of national press. I mean, and what it looks like she's doing, Bill, is that she's really saying, look, I'm going to flaunt and boast and brag about my democratic progressive principles, but at the same time, talk about some of the things that she's been able to do by working across the aisle to get things done in the House. Now, I will tell you this, to be fair, I do think that there are going to be some people who are going to really question some of those deals and question some of those compromises, because before you get to the general election, you're going to have to win the Democratic primary. Lastly, I think it's really going to talk. We're really going to see how advanced Georgia is. I mean, because I do think, you know, putting yourself up as being the first African American woman governor in the country, yeah, that excites people like me and others who are African Americans. But I think her biggest challenge is going to be making sure that she locks up the Democratic vote in Metro, particularly with African-American voters who are not all with her right now.
So she does have a primary opponent, Stacey Evans, state representative.
I would expect more.
And what Theron is talking about, one of the compromises that Stacey Evans is already hitting on in terms of Abrams is she went along with a Republican plan to rejigger the funding formula for Hope Scholarships, which a great many people were very upset about.
And she took some heat within the House Democratic caucus for that.
So, Jim, where are we in 2017, a year out? Where are we in those two areas that we really are going to have to watch carefully? Number one, is Georgia truly turning purple again? And does a Democrat really have a chance of recapturing the governor's mansion? And then, are we advanced enough? We've had one statewide African-American elected official, right? Michael Thurmond.
No, we've had more than that. No.
More?
Well, you've Thurber, statewide. Yeah, Thurber, I'm sorry. You've had one African-American who has captured a statewide office without being an incumbent.
Right.
Thurber Baker.
Right. Thank you.
Michael Thurmond listens to the show. Let me clear it up for you, Brian. Let me give you a history lesson.
Thurmond Baker was elected as a constitutional officer.
No, but he was appointed.
He was appointed. I'm not saying he wasn't.
Because he likes to put that in his bio. He wants to make sure that everyone knows that.
Well, and also we have some appeals court and Supreme Court members who are African American
To your point, where are we headed? That's why I think this Karen Handel John Ossoff race is so important. Number one, I think if Ossoff carries the day on June 20th, it will truly, truly invigorate a state Democratic Party. You've already got some machinations about them looking at Rob Woodall's seat over in Gwinnett. You're going to see them you're going to see Democrats really perk up in the in the state legislature if Ossoff wins. If he doesn't win and Karen Handel wins by a you know, I'd say maybe the 5 percentage points or more, then you're going to see, I think, a more subdued reaction. And you may see Democrats who might get into the 2018 race for governor just kind of lay out and let this be the fight between Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans.
Well, the other thing I want to point out is two things. One, I want to commend Jason Carter. Jason Carter last week came out and basically said that he's not going to run for governor. I know Brian was just so distraught. He really thought that he was going to be able to come on the show and talk about Jason Carter a little bit more. But that was a very honorable thing to do. But the other thing I want to...
Why is it honorable? They just
Because the truth of the matter is this, Brian. I mean, you know, a lot of people were waiting to see what Jason Carter was going to do. A lot of people, the Carter family? Yeah, well, no, Jason Carter himself.
His wife.
But they were waiting to see what he was going to do. And I think it kind of opened the way for Stacey Godfrey Evans. And let's not forget, you know, Governor Roy Barnes as well, who was a staunch Jason Carter supporter. But real quickly, the other thing, let's push back to the Republicans and how I think that it's going to be really interesting. The former governor and the current governor of Georgia are both former Democrats. All right. We know right now that if a person on the Democratic side runs for governor, they're going to lose roughly between 200 and 250,000 voters. Right. These are people who, that if you look at when Mark Taylor lost and when Jason Carter lost, it was roughly about 200,000 voters. I think what's going to be interesting, I want to be the first to say this, in 2018, you're going to have everyone running for office. None of these people, men or women, have ever been a Democrat before. I think the difference in Georgia has been this, is that they have been these white Democrats who will go and pull a ballot for, say, Michael Thurman or Thurber Baker or Kathy Cox or Mark Taylor, but would also vote for a Johnny Isaacson, will also vote for a Nathan Deal and a Sandra Perdue. And I think that that's going to be the difference here, where if John Ossoff pulls this off, or even if he doesn't, I think the state now is going to be so divided amongst the party. I think Democrats will have a real opening with some white Democrats who historically have voted for these past two former Democratic governors who are now Republicans.
All right. I want to interrupt the conversation, but I want to keep going. We just got a statement from the White House that was sent to us. The president's power to assert executive privilege is well established. However, in order to facilitate a swift and thorough examination of the facts sought by the Senate Intelligence Committee, President Trump will not assert executive privilege regarding James Comey's scheduled testimony. There's a lot of questioning about whether the president would try to stop Comey from testifying on Thursday. So the White House just sent that news release out to all of us who get their news releases.
Are we going to switch topics here?
In a few minutes. I don't want to quite let this drop yet, because I think it's still interesting. So I know the state has changed over the years, but minority candidates, whether they're religious minorities or African Americans, have a hard time winning statewide office here.
Well, Sam Owens won. He's Jewish.
Yes, that's exactly right. He did, but not without facing a lot of trouble in South Georgia, where there were many people who were talking about his religion in ways that we don't even want to talk about on this show at this point.
But I will tell you what's happening with Ossoff, and I think this is going to be the future of the Democratic Party, unless Republicans can kind of capture some of this vote, is this millennial spear that's kind of thrusting up through along Georgia 400, up through Alpharetta and beyond, because that's becoming Metro Atlanta's technology triangles, so to speak.
Yeah, but what we can't do as Democrats, and someone who's on the show who's actually won a statewide race before, is that we can't let Republicans actually...
Oh, but I've watched them win it.
No, but I'm saying, listen, no, but I'm saying, Jim, it's no attack on you.
Talking about me?
No attack. I'm just saying, I'm the only person who's won a Democratic race statewide on this show. And so what I'm saying to you is that I think the mistake that we will make is to allow Republicans to want us. See, Brian wants us to only focus on 400 and millennials, right? And to totally, no, seriously, and to abandon the South. I mean, a person like a John Barrow can win in those congressional districts over in 12. A person like a Sanford Bishop. What I'm saying is, and I have to applaud Stacey Abrams on this, is that you got to go beyond Metro. Even though Metro is growing, to your point, Bill, the demographics are there. We can pick off certain percentages within that South Georgia area to make sure that we're competitive come November 2018.
Just to put this in a little historical perspective, when Judge Robert Benham ran as a statewide for his judgeship,
a re-election,
it was run by Democrats in the Barnes administration.
Bobby Kahn.
And the campaign posters across North Georgia had a big, beautiful photograph of Judge Robert Benham, vote Benham. And in South Georgia, there was no photograph of Benham. And that's not insignificant, at least historically, whether or not that is still what would happen today. That's all I wanted to add to that conversation.
That was in the early 80s.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
and
I agree.
And maybe we've moved somewhat beyond that. But to Theron's point, and basically, I will agree with Theron on this. What we've got now, and Republicans see it too, you've got two races in Metro Atlanta now. You've got a race for the kind of the super Metro Atlanta footprint, and then you've got a race for the rest of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And you can't neglect either one of them and still carry statewide.
Okay, we're going to take a break, but we are going to pivot from state issues to the Trump administration in just a second. So let me ask you one last quick thing. First of all, Theron, I'll start with you, because we're not going to go back until after the first debate to look at how it turned out. What do you expect? I'm going to ask you to make this a brief, each of you give a brief statement. What do you expect to see tomorrow night? How are Handel and Ossoff going to present themselves? How are they going to attack each other? Just talk a bit.
I think John has got to come out and basically continue to be as message disciplined as he has been throughout this campaign. I think he's got to continue to tell people what he's for. He's got to focus on his jobs message. He's got to focus on holding Donald Trump accountable. I think what he also needs to be prepared for is that Karen Handel is going to run the typical Republican playbook. I think she's going to pound him on not living in the district, and she's going to say basically he's not one of us. I think those are the two different things we're going to see in the debate. But I think that ultimately John has got to be bold. He's got to be specific about what he wants to do for the people of the 6th District.
Brian?
We can't let him get away with that. We can't let him get away with being the safe, moderate protest vote against Trump. You know, you can, if you're uncomfortable with Trump, vote for me, and I'm not going to do anything up there that you think is crazy. I'm not going to vote. He wants to be nonpartisan, and we can't let him be that. He's not nonpartisan. This is someone who went and worked for Hank Johnson. He has the endorsement of John Lewis. These are not moderates. These are part of the progressive left-wing part of the House Democratic Caucus. And that's what he is. And we have to unmask him.
I got a very interesting press release from a fellow named Brian Robinson this morning who told me that AARP was an online sponsor of tomorrow's debate with WSB TV.
So we're going to hear a lot about health care.
And that means we're going to hear a whole lot about health care and attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
You know, that's fascinating. All right, I really want to take a break and move on, but it is worth pointing out that once you have AARP as a sponsor, you make a really excellent point, which is that is going to have an impact on what they talk about in this debate. And I think it tends to favor Ossoff, given that the repeal and reform has not been a particularly popular
It's been a disaster.
Idea thing out there. So, we'll see. We'll see. Let's take our second break, come back. We got a lot to talk about in terms of what's going on with President Trump over the weekend, with London. So you're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, interracial intimacy in America and the Supreme Court case that overturned laws prohibiting interracial marriage. Cheryl Cashin is the author of the new book, Loving. Cashin's parents were civil rights activists in Alabama. She and her brother integrated their school. Her father ran for governor against segregationist George Wallace. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Theron Johnson, Brian Robinson. Brian, you're saying that AARP is only a sponsor of the debate. They're not an active participant in picking topics and that sort of thing.
That's right. They're sponsoring the online coverage. And by the way, Theron Johnson and I will be on that online coverage after the debate on WSB TV.
Oh, good.
After the debate tomorrow. So they're sponsoring that. They have issues and they have perspectives on the healthcare legislation, and they are bringing awareness to that. But and they're sponsoring it as a way of bringing awareness to their issues.
Okay. People are tweeting to us, which you can do by using our handle at Politics GPB. So let me just read a couple of those before we move on. Let me see if I can find some that we can work with. Ben Andrews says, Ossoff passing on CNN debate is smart. He's looking toward district, not just building national profile, like critics say. We've gotten a couple of tweets from people already saying what we reported, that the president has now announced he is not going to assert executive privilege. So just keep tweeting us, and we'll find some more in a little while. Let me throw out one more thing before we move on. We have our phone line that we want to use to get your thoughts as you listen to the show, as it sparks your own ideas. But here's what I'd love to do. I want to open the phone line and ask people to call us to respond after you've watched tomorrow night's Channel 2 debate. The number is 678-757-4472. We do know what time these calls come in. So if you start sending us messages at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning saying, oh, no doubt, handle one. Well, no, that's not genuine. So after the debate, use our phone line. Tell us in a succinct way who won the debate and why. 678-757-4472. We'd love to hear from you. Jim Galloway, a big weekend and a sad weekend with the terrorist attack in London, compounded here in this country by a president who we keep hearing over and over, somebody's going to start to restrain him. Somebody ought to take away his cell phone. It's not happening.
No. And of course, you had the yet another round of London attacks on Saturday. And the tweeting started Sunday morning.
Well, it actually started Saturday night when he tweeted out an unconfirmed story on the Drudge Report about the attack.
Right. He ended up, I mean, that ended up being a wash because it was later called a terrorist attack. Basically, he's got a thing going with the mayor, with the Muslim mayor of London. He's picking a fight with him. And over some, you know, you've got a message from the mayor of London saying, don't be alarmed by all the cops on the street who are now carrying guns. That's new in Britain. And you've got the president of the United States just mocking that. Feel safe in London.
Yeah. You know, and this is supposed to be a time of really healing and solidarity. And I think that The president's recent action shows what I've been saying for a long time, is that this guy is completely unhinged and that he's unfit to be president because he cannot even behave. I mean, it really takes 5 seconds to say, you know what, maybe I don't need to send that tweet or maybe I don't need to say this. But clearly to go out and to really attack this mayor and to really just overshadow what has happened in London, and to really offer some solidarity and some understanding, he goes and attacks these folks.
But if I could tie this to his visit to NATO, to mm-hmm. Brussels, to his decision on the Paris Climate Accord, and now this is a president who really doesn't feel an obligation to lead that part of the world. And I think that's the truly, truly important and maybe even worrying thing.
Brian, Congress comes back this week, and they come back after this weekend in which the president not only went after the mayor of London, misinterpreting a statement that the mayor made, but also moving one step beyond that, essentially sending out at least one tweet, which in fact may very well come into play in the Supreme Court's deliberations, assuming they take the case over his travel ban. He said, this is a travel ban, and we do need it, essentially, after, again, what happened in London. Are Republicans going to remain solidified around him in the weeks ahead, or is there going to be some at least subtle defection?
Well, I think there's been subtle defection and sometimes out and out defection all along. But, you know, this goes to a messaging issue with the White House. This is a travel ban being said in the tweet today after his staff and those around him have tried for weeks, if not months now, to say it's not a travel ban. It's extreme vetting. They had their talking points down. And this has become a recurrent problem. I think a lot of Americans agree with what President Trump is trying to accomplish on this. It polls very well. People don't want to say it publicly.
Is he trying to accomplish? Help us understand that. Let's make sure we know what you're saying when you say people agree.
When he talks about the travel ban, he is talking about who can immigrate to this country.
Okay.
And are they going to amalgamate? And are they going to be productive citizens? A lot of Americans have concern based on the terrorism that they have seen play out in our country, in San Bernardino, in Orlando, et cetera, and in Paris, and in London, and in Germany, and in the Netherlands. And those things would not be happening had it not been for permissive immigration
issues. The problem is that it is federal law, a law passed by Congress, that you cannot discriminate according to country of origin or religion in determining who comes into the U.S. That's the problem.
Yeah, and Brian knows that, because the bottom line is, Brian, look, me as a American first and as a Democrat, Absolutely. I don't want someone coming into this country who has the intent to harm us and to kill innocent people. But to Jim's point is that you never, ever want to say that from the inception of this travel ban, because that's essentially what it is. The president has been told time and time again that it's unconstitutional and it's unlawful. So rather than go back and try to uphold the Constitution of the United States, which Republicans love to,
or change the law,
and then he comes out first. The first tactic was, oh, the former president did it, I should be able to do it. He had all these executive orders. But to come out and basically blatantly say, I'm going to break the law, I'm going to be unconstitutional, and not even offer an alternative to change it. Therein lies the problem. So when you say the American people want it, no, they don't want that.
I do think we need to be careful, though, Theron. It is your interpretation of the language of the executive order that it's unconstitutional.
No, it's been said, Bill.
In the lower courts. That's exactly
right. Yeah, that it's been deemed unconstitutional.
Right.
That's why it's been consistently being overturned.
I just want to remind people this is going to go to the Supreme Court and they'll have the ultimate say on it.
Because it comes down to, and I've heard Sally Yates talk about this. They say it's unconstitutional because the First Amendment allows the right to free exercise of religion. That's for Americans. Not for the rest of the world. The First Amendment doesn't apply to everybody else. It doesn't determine who we can and can't let into our country. You know, look, and it should be okay if it's not okay for us to determine who can come in based on their values and do they complement ours. You know, you have some coming from.
Wait. We should determine on the basis of values.
Yes. Okay.
Russian Jews who emigrated to the United States because of the pogroms were poor. They clearly didn't have democratic values. They didn't live in a democratic society. They couldn't have had democratic values. You don't. I would suggest, I'm not sure you are really going to want to defend exactly the way you said that.
I think the government needs to be flexible, and it changes over time what is permissible and what isn't. But when you have people who come here and they move to this country and they perform female genital mutilation on teenage girls when they're forced to wear burkas, that does not correspond with our values. It is misogynistic, and I think that we need to have a set of principles. And if you don't agree with us on these things, that's fine.
But your daughter's going to go to school here
and learn how to read.
The president's lawyers are going to be in court, have been in court, and will be again in front of the Supreme Court, most likely, arguing that this isn't about religious values. This is about people who potentially are dangerous, and it's only a temporary remedy until they can get a better vetting process in place.
Right. And I still think that, Brian, if you want to go that direction, that's okay. You just need to change federal law.
I think we should change federal law because we saw in polling this year.
And you've got David Perdue and Tom Cotton trying to truly restrict immigration in the United States. So far, that bill has not moved.
At all.
Hey, we're very early in this Congress. Nothing much of consequence has moved at this juncture. And look, immigration is a very touchy subject. A lot of people are scared to touch it and to make a statement of values because they're going to get called a racist in the national media. And that is sort of the reaction to political correctness that gave us Donald Trump. People are tired of that stuff.
So that was one of the things. I'm glad you brought that up, and I appreciate that, Brian. Political correctness. That was one of the things that the president tweeted was, we've got to get past political correctness and deal with this problem without regard to that. Jim, I'm not quite sure what that means.
Well, there are times when political correctness and the Constitution conflict, and one confuses one for the other. I think truly if he had said we have to get past the constitutional correctness of the travel ban, then you're talking about a different reaction.
Okay, go ahead, finish that thought.
And I think we tend to invoke limited government when it suits us. And right now you have, especially among Republicans, among conservative Americans, who want to lift restrictions, the current restrictions on government when it comes to immigration and what they can do so they can look at things like values, like faith, and like religion. And you've got another side who says that carries us into a very dangerous area.
Yeah, but I think it goes back to, you know, our founding fathers. And this is the thing that really bothers me more than anything. And I think the point that we're trying to make, Brian, is that what President Trump is attempting to do is unconstitutional and unlawful.
I disagree.
But it totally goes against what we stand for as Americans. We are a country who believe in religious freedom. We are a country who were founded by immigrants. And to basically blatantly discriminate on individuals, many of whom we saw through this failed attempt to do the travel ban, who are actually in this country to help this country and defend ourselves against other countries who want to harm us, it's just not the American way. And I think that the president is trying to not only shake up the electric, he's trying to destroy this country. Look, when he tries to move so unlawfully.
Well, like you don't really mean you think he's trying to destroy the country.
No, what I'm saying
he's trying to keep us safe. That's what he's trying to do.
And there's ways to keep us safe. President Obama showed the American people how to keep American people safe. The one thing you guys never want to give this former president credit for is that he always protected the homeland. But this president, with this reckless behavior and this unlawful movements that he's moving to really try to shove this down the American people's throat, is what divides. And Bill just pointed out, Jim just pointed out, this is a president who is not making any attempts to increase our foreign allies so we can keep America safe. And I think that's the problem. We, as Americans and as a president, cannot keep us safe alone. We need our foreign allies to work with us to fight terrorism in this country.
There are so many problems with what Theron just said. We don't have enough time for me to rebut them all.
All right. Let me do this then. Let me go over just a few of the tweets from the president over the last 24 hours. We already know that he said this: at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and mayor of London says there is, quote, no reason to be alarmed, unquote. He tweeted, we must stop being politically correct and get down to the business of security for our people. If we don't get smart, it'll only get worse. He tweeted this: people, the lawyers and the courts can call it whatever they want, but I am calling what we need and what it is, a travel ban. That's the tweet that could run him into significant problems when they go before the Supreme Court. But then just a few hours ago, he tweeted this: pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who had to think fast on his no reason to be alarmed statement. Jim, that just, why? Why do we want to be picking such a big fight with a mayor of one of our most important allies at a time when they're at such a vulnerable place?
Yeah, that part doesn't make, especially when no one in the United States can name the mayor of London.
Yeah,
you know. But Brian, if I could just try to calmly address one of your points here, is we had Theresa May, Prime Minister of Britain, in the aftermath in the last 12 hours, get up and say that enough is enough. That her government needs to do more to stop terrorism, and she had an interesting line: if that means the extending the period of confinement for people they suspect without warrant, without charge, with no habeas corpus, if they have to extend the amount of time they can confine people, then they're going to do that. Now that's in Britain. In the United States, that is a far, far more difficult thing to do because of the protections we set in place. And when you talk about trying to dismantle that, that's where you run into problems.
Well, if you look at the way the Europeans have handled this in recent years, France outlawed the headscarf for Muslim girls in school. Merkel and the German leaders have outlawed burqas wherever they can legally do so. See, those are things where they are responding to newcomers and trying to make them accept the values of the country, and that causes conflict. And that's caused conflict throughout history. It's very normal, but in our country, if we let those folks in who want to live that way, who want to be culturally different, because of our Constitution, we can't have those kind of laws that France and Germany have because the First Amendment doesn't allow it. So we've got to be really careful about who we let in. And let me clarify, and I appreciate the time, Bill.
Sure.
That I'm not saying all Muslims are violent. I'm not saying that at all. And I'm not saying that we should completely ban all Muslim immigration. Absolutely. I have some great Muslim friends. They're professionals. They're educated. They're taxpayers. And they love this country. I sat next to one at the state convention on Saturday, actually. And I'm just saying we've got to be extremely careful, and we can't do what Theron would have us do and us pretend that we don't know who the September 11th hijackers are. We don't know who shot up Orlando. We don't know who shot up San Bernardino. We don't know what's happened in England the next few years, last few days. We know exactly what is driving it. Let's quit pretending and tiptoeing around that issue.
What's interesting, and then we're going to finish this up because we're running completely out of time, Theron, is that the Supreme Court is unlikely to take up the travel ban until the fall. And what the president has said all along is that this was a temporary measure while they evaluate how they can, in fact, step up enforcement, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to talk about. If they want to do extreme vetting, more power to them. But they should certainly be able to do that by October, which would render the whole Supreme Court case completely moot.
Yeah, and listen, you know, I mean, I'm not going to get into a tit for tat back, Brian, about, you know, who's more American than the other. The truth of the matter is that we both are Americans. We both love this country, and we want to make sure we're safe. I think what you're getting at, Bill, is that there's just a way to govern. And that has been my main criticism of this president since he had his weak inauguration, where he only had a less than half of what President Obama had when he was inaugurated, is that you've got to follow the law.
Right.
And then more importantly, if this is so important to you, then you're right. I mean, this is something that we definitely can get done faster if he cooperates and works with others.
Jim, you want 30 seconds to sum up what you're hearing and how you're reacting? That may be it.
Stop tweeting. Just stop it. Stop it.
Jim, I think Republicans would second that. I think his staff in the White House would second that.
That's it. Oh, good. We came to something we all agree on. Theron Johnson, Brian Robinson, Jim Galloway, of course. It was wonderful to have all three of you here for Political Rewind. We'll be back with you at 2 o'clock on Wednesday, when we'll break down what happened in this big confrontation, the face-off between Ossoff and Handel, Handel and Ossoff, the heavyweight championship of the congressional season. It'll be fun to get a chance to talk about that. Before we leave you today, let me remind you that we'd love to have you call us after the debate is over. As I said, we know what time you call at 678-757-4472. Tell us who you think won, who lost, why, what stood out in your mind. And we'll see if we can play some of those on Wednesday. Finally, real quick, I've mentioned it before. I'm going to mention it every week until it happens. Starting on Thursday, July 6th, at 2 o'clock on Thursdays, we're going to be presenting Two-Way Street, the weekend show that many of you have listened to with authors, artists, chefs, creative people telling stories. We'll be here at 2 o'clock on Thursdays. We'll still rebroadcast the show on Sundays at 11 in the morning for those of you who prefer to hear it then. But we're looking forward to adding an hour to our weekday schedule here at GPB. I'm Bill Nigut. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you Wednesday at 2.